Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks so much for listening today to Education Talk Radio, which, as you know, is part of our American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, where we're going to archive this podcast and where we archive all of our podcasts, where our magazine is, our online journal called Equity and Access, again, ace-ed.org. Everything we do over there is free. We'd love for you to join with us if you want to. Okay, you'll see a lot of great information all about equity, all about access. And as we wind up the craziest year in education ever, so please go over there, check it out over at ace-ed.org. You'll enjoy it. If you do, flip through the magazine, please. Okay, we write it for you guys. Okay, it's all for pre-K-12 at our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Got a nice show for you this morning to start. Start off this April 12th week, which, by the way, starts off, this is the day that the Titanic left Southampton, so we hope we have better luck this week, okay, but that was in 1912. Thanks, Hannah. I just heard that, okay? So we got Hannah Olson here, who's already laughing at my jokes, okay, because to start off the week perfectly. Hannah is, this is great, okay, we're going to talk about getting young women into STEM careers, which is key, but Hannah is the founder of MyStemKits.com, which is now part of the Mimio STEM system, which is done by Boxlight. All right, and she helps develop the content curriculum for MyStemKits.com, which is the hub of the curriculum for the entire suite of Boxlight STEM solutions, like 3D printing and STEM design challenges, etc. Thank you for laughing about the Titanic. Good morning, Hannah.
What I'm here for.
It's great, isn't it?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure indeed. I can't thank you enough for being here. I must ask you, at a 719 area code, are you in Colorado?
I am.
Well, then I want to thank you for doing this.
Across the country, so.
Yeah, and thank you for doing this at 7 a.m. I appreciate it. It's 9 a.m. here on the East Coast. Thank you for doing this so early.
Oh, no worries. This is when I actually normally start work, so I can overlap with my East Coast teachers better.
Well, that's good. You have assuaged my guilt, so I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Okay? And, you know, Hannah, we're going to talk about motivating young women into STEM careers, your thoughts on that. But the interesting thing of this is that's what we're going to talk about, but you actually live that. Okay? You are that person, right?
I am. I never expected to be in STEM. I pursued animation and art as a degree, but as it turns out, I ended up in STEM, and I just absolutely love it. And,
yeah,
I wish I had been more inspired to pursue it earlier, actually.
You can always do that, okay? And you're right there already, and people are using what you do, okay, to teach them careers in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. But you know, you're doing it, you're there, and I think it's always interesting. You major in art and design, and this is so many people. You major in one thing, and then you use that to do something else, okay? And your career changes, even though you never planned on it. I think it's always wonderful. So tell us, Hannah, you walk the walk, literally, motivating young women to pursue STEM careers. I hope they don't take the Titanic. Please fly air and wear a mask, okay? On that note, okay, how'd you get started this?
Well, my STEM kit started about 7.5 years ago, and it was an idea that came out of an entrepreneur in Atlanta and then Florida State University, which wanted to create hands-on learning tools for educators that were more affordable. And the way they came up with doing that was by using 3D printers to create these manipulatives rather than have to go through traditional manufacturing. This allowed the teachers to create exactly what they needed right in their classroom. And from the get-go, they needed someone who could do 3D modeling and design. And that's where my art degree came in handy, because that's where I had what I had learned as part of my animation degree. So I came in as the ground floor, and I have been there from day one. It started with just designing and developing the 3D tools and has grown well beyond that to now where I'm writing lesson plans for robots and sensors and creating engineering challenges for the students where they have to learn how to do their own 3D modeling and design and figure out all the problems that come in with that, because engineering is inherently about solving problems. And
yes, it
is. It's so much fun.
It's really amazing. How much do you – this is going to be the dumbest question of this entire interview. How much did you have to know about STEM? Let me ask you two ways. How much did you have to know about STEM? And how much did you have to know about education to help create? Your degree was in animation and art, which is wonderful, okay? So now you take that and you put it here. How did you learn the other side?
Well, I'll admit it was a lot of learning on the job. So the first 5 years or so, I was actually headquartered in Florida at Florida State University, and I was working hand-in-hand with all of the curriculum developers that were there. And they wrote our first few hundred of lesson plans, and I worked closely with them. I saw how they were writing it, I learned how to build the objects to work with it, and every day I got to learn on the job. So every day I was learning more about math, I was learning more about science, and that's one of my favorite aspects of my job, is just the ability to keep learning and keep exploring. And so then I took what I learned from them, and now I use it to do my own lessons and do my own research.
That's pretty amazing, I got to tell you. And, you know, you say you're the co-founder of this, which I think is wonderful. How did it wind up over at Mimio? What happened with all that, which is good friends of mine over at Boxlight?
Well, Boxlight is known for their interactive flat panels, their document cameras, their projectors, and a lot of that side of education technology. And they decided they wanted to expand into STEM a bit more. They already had a robotics program, and they already had their lab disk sensors. And those were two powerful STEM components, but they were just part of STEM. They didn't really cover all of it, because with a robot, you can do a lot of great engineering and code. With the sensors, that's a lot of science. But they were kind of missing the math component and just another way of looking at STEM. And that's where both my STEM kits came in and Robo3D, which is a 3D printer company. And so they decided to bring us into the Boxlight family. And now, after we had these four different brands, essentially, so we had Robo3D printers, Mimio MyBots, lab disk sensors, and then my STEM kits, we decided to kind of unify instead of having four brands, and now we're just Mimio STEM, and we're a whole suite of education technology solutions specifically for STEM education.
It's really fascinating.
And then my STEM kits became the hub for all of the other three products and their curriculum.
It really is the hub, and you know, it's so fascinating how everything evolves into this, okay? And it's just great. Now, tell us, if we may, before I get into this, because it's going to matter to what I say later, about what is My STEM Kits. It's at mystemkits.com. Tell everybody what it is.
So there are sort of four different aspects of what My STEM Kits is. The first aspect is lesson plans. So My STEM Kits has over 350 traditional STEM lesson plans. So these might be geometry lessons that are helping elementary students differentiate shapes, all the way up to biochemistry and ethics and talking about CRISPR and DNA in high school and everywhere in between. We have lots of statistics and just everything pretty much is covered in here. And these lesson plans utilize 3D printers, robots, and sensors in various parts to do them. The next component is design challenges, and these are the engineering design challenges where students have to actually build and create objects, and then they can 3D print and test them to see how well they work. And then that ties back in with more traditional math and science as well. But they actually get to do engineering, design, 3D printing, and really test it all out. So those are really fun.
Yeah, and it's great. You know, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you something. Go ahead. Go.
The third component is ready-to-print models. So I said we have, like, DNA and shape lessons. We have manipulatives. The teachers can 3D print to go with those lessons. And the final component is virtual STEM kits, which we developed for this past year of online and blended learning. So teachers can do virtual simulations with their students no matter where they're at.
Talk about that. Get into a little more detail on that one. I love that.
So the virtual simulations are actually designed to be replicas of our 3D printable kits. So we have this little handheld catapult that uses little ball bearings, and you can launch different projectiles with it. fits in the size of your, it fits in the palm of your hand. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of different.
We used, when I was a kid, we called those spitballs. When I was a kid, we called those spitballs. Okay, things have changed. So go ahead, yeah.
I mean, I would prefer if the students not project spitballs, but honestly,
yes.
In middle school, there's no saying.
it's the politically correct way of saying a spitball. Okay, so it's a small projectile that these students can use to get better.
We
got
3D projectiles that go with these 3D printed ones. You can, with 3D printing, you can control the infill or the density of the object. So we print identical looking projectiles, but some are lighter, medium, and heavy. And then you can do like statistical activities, change launch angle, do different things like that to talk about physics and stats. Well, we take that same concept, only now we make it into a virtual simulation. So students can use a virtual catapult that looks identical to the 3D printed one, and they can tell it, okay, this is the weight I want to do, this is the force I want to use, I can tell it the launch angle, and then we have different modes. So for the catapult, you can either do a mode for distance, and it'll just tell you how far it flew, or you can do a mode to coordinates, and it'll tell you which coordinate it landed at. So if you're in middle school doing Pythagorean proof, you can then take the coordinates to calculate the distance flown. So that's an idea, a sample of those virtual kits.
I think it's great. And, you know, I think the way you guys bounced up for this virtual year, this crazy year we just had, I think is incredible. So let's talk about what we want to talk about here. We know what my STEM kits are. We know your background, okay? We do want more females, okay? I hate to use the word girls, okay? We want more females, more females, okay, to get involved in STEM. And a lot of them are, okay? And we know that, not only from what you've designed here, but I go to virtually all of my healthcare folks I go to, every nurse practitioner and half my doctors at least are female, okay? So obviously there's a good interest, okay, among my opposite sex, okay, in STEM. That is, that being in healthcare is STEM, all right? What are we looking for here? How do you define females getting into STEM, okay, more so than what we're doing now?
Well, like you said, it is growing. If you look at census data starting in 1970, women only made up 8% of STEM workers. And we've made improvement on that. Now, if you're looking at, like, 2019 census data, it's up to 27% of STEM fields are filled by women, which is great improvement. You start seeing them now. But it's still less than a third of the workforce when women make up half of the workforce.
That, which brings me to my question. How are we defining? I'm just an average person. I live in Maine, and most of my healthcare professionals, at least half of them, and certainly all of the physician assistants and the nurse practitioners, they're all females. Healthcare to me, and this is where I want to get down here, healthcare to me is a STEM profession, okay?
Yes.
But I think the world, and it should be, okay? But I think the world is, I'm not sure of this, so I'm asking you, a STEM profession. Okay, are we talking about outside healthcare when we say that? Are we talking about biochemical engineers and just engineers in general and all that sort of thing? How do you define it in your head when you think about it?
Yeah, so for anyone who doesn't know the acronym STEM, it's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So any STEM career is, yes, healthcare, that hits science. But you also have computer programmers, that hits technology. Aerospace engineers, automotive engineers, all of the engineers is the engineering. And then mathematicians and various other people who work in mathematics occupations. So if you look at STEM as a whole, that includes cartographers, surveyors, statisticians, all the various healthcare workers, social scientists, anyone who's doing biology, ecology. I mean, it's a wide, wide collection of STEM options that fit within that category.
So the answer is it's growing. And by the way, we're talking about minorities too here, okay, any given minority.
Absolutely.
All right? Right. So we want more of these people, okay, involved as opposed to the white male, so to speak. We want more of these people, okay, involved in all of the STEM fields. So when you design your MyStem kits, okay, and you're thinking about this, obviously you're concerned about this, so is the company, okay? When you look at it, what do you do, okay, to help them, to help get the girls and the minorities, if I may, okay, involved in this, more involved and stick with it? How do you look at it from the design point of view?
It's definitely a multifaceted approach. Part of what I bring to the table of not having a traditional STEM background
I love that.
Realizing the hiccups and the issues I had. I always was good at math because math was fun. It was solving things, figuring out problems, but I hated science. I despised science because it was memorizing. The only science I liked was physics. So hands-on problem solving, that sort of engaging, interactive experience is what I try to create with the lessons, and what FSU taught me about too is, you know, doing these in-depth creative, like integrating creativity as well. So the world requires creative problem solvers, and STEM is the perfect place to do that. Not to mention, it just makes it more fun. If you get to, you know, launch catapults in your stats class, come on. That's way more fun than just analyzing a table of data.
Sure as hell is. Right.
Now, you still have to analyze the data table, but you get to create the data table using a catapult.
Exactly.
So, and then placing it in the context of real-world problems. So a lot of those other stats lessons are on invasive species or topography mapping or different things like that that just ground it. Why are you learning this? Why does it matter?
Actually, that's a good point, okay? And I think one of the things, and you said it's 27% now, okay? It used to be less, and now it's 27%. Are female minorities in STEM? Is that what you're saying?
That's just females. Minorities are even smaller. Minorities make up about 10% total of STEM fields. And the largest minority is Asian. That is in STEM. The other minorities, Hispanic and so forth, are significantly smaller.
Yeah. There's so many questions. So when we go in, okay, and show the kids, the product is very engaging. I want to ask this the right way. The product is very engaging, but we're looking at trying to move minorities, girls, into, okay, the STEM fields, okay? It's more engaging now than ever, and I grant you that without question, okay? But, you know, let me use an example. When you do a catapult, okay, you said that, all right? This is going to be a funny question. A catapult, in my mind, all right, is a guy thing, all right? You can argue with me on that, but it just strikes me as a guy thing. You throw something over the wall like in Monty Python. You're throwing cows over the wall. You know what I mean? Remember that? In Monty Python and the Holy Grail. All right?
Cows.
Yes. Okay. So my point is it's a guy thing, all right? And I'm not questioning all your good things. I think it's wonderful, okay? But how do we get let's talk about kids in urban areas, okay? And just as a good example, they're not used to cows, okay? We can't even use the cows, for example, okay? My point is, how do we get them, okay, more involved from the very beginning? We know they can do it. We need to make it more engaging, but everybody's talking about cultural responsiveness. That goes to both females and minorities, okay? So when you design stuff, and I'm just throwing this stuff out there, okay, how do we get them engaged from the get-go? Can we show them the picture of a wonderful female scientist just when they open the kit and say, you can be this person? Show them a wonderful African-American scientist, say, you can be this person. Okay. In other words, how do we get them beyond catapults? Okay, and talk about the things that are really culturally relevant to them. Does that make sense?
I think absolutely, and I think you have a very valid and wonderful approach you just mentioned, which is role models.
Thank you.
Relatable role models is huge because, you know, even 40 years ago, 1970, women were only 8% of STEM workers. Women didn't see themselves in that position. Now, it's so much easier to find relatable role models, and these role models, they can be of a variety of ethnicities as well. So, you know, if you're using our enzyme substrate interaction kit, high school, fancy stuff, all about how proteins and enzymes work together, actually, that ties in really well with COVID right now for you child people.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Talk, when you're doing this, talk about Flossie Wong Stahl. She was an Asian American woman. She invented a lot of things related to HIV and proved that that was the cause of AIDS. Like, talk about her. Now, if you're doing our water filtration kit and talking about the importance of clean water, bring in Deepika Karup. She's a young inventor and scientist. She's only in her 20s now. And she's working on developing solar-powered water purification systems. There are so many amazing role models out there. You know, the woman who invented the batteries used by the International Space Station, Olga Gonzalez-Sanabria, Hispanic. You know, the examples out there are wide and vast. And part of that comes to the teacher of just thinking to include that. Now, we do a little bit in our lesson plans in terms of we create either backstories or career connections, and in the backstories we'll say, like, okay, you're helping Sophia design a space station. Sophia is a name that is relatable to so many different cultures. It's not Jane. You know? I think just showing them people who are successfully doing it is key.
It is incredible. And so you take what you've got and this idea, you put it all together. I mean, this is the way we have to encourage these kids to do it, because they are not used to seeing themselves in these roles. And we have to make the STEM, okay, very relatable to them. And they have to understand at the very beginning, okay, of learning this, that they can do this. This can be a career.
Absolutely.
You know, and what you guys do is so important to this, okay? And the way you develop these products is so important to this, okay? But it's for everybody, okay? And it's from K-12, okay? My STEM kits is K-12 product, okay? And we get these kids recognizing that it's just amazing what we can do and the way the world is changing as we go through this, you know. As you talk to people, you just mentioned some wonderful people, okay? Do kids understand as they do the STEM, okay, the value, okay, of what they're doing, not only to the world as they learn more and more and more, but to themselves, that the career itself is a good, healthy career, okay? How do we get them to understand that, the benefits of pursuing a STEM career? How do we get them to understand
that? A lot of that comes into how you create the lesson plan. So I mentioned we place a lot of ours in the context of real-world problems. And I think that helps initiate the importance of what they're learning. And even if you're learning something just like measuring, you have to measure how far something is. When you're in elementary school and you're just learning to use a ruler, you may not be like, realizing exactly how this is important or where this comes in place. So we put a career connection in every one of our lesson plans, and this will say, this career, surveying, it uses measurements. You want to know why it's important? Because every single builder out there needs surveyors to tell them where their property lines are. You know, things like that. And so it places it in context that hopefully they can understand, and those, you know, grow and change, and every lesson has a different one.
That is so damn important. I love the way you do that, and that makes it starts to show them a relevance, okay, to a guide that they can see themselves doing this and how it fits in later. Because I'll tell you, when I was in school, nobody put anything into context. Okay, it was unbelievable. Okay, and I'm older than you, by the way. Who put anything into context? Okay, what is the point of learning this? Okay, and you mentioned it before, which just struck me. I have to go back to something you said. When the kids flip the projectile with the catapult, and then they can learn, and you said, well, they can also discuss the coordinates of where it landed. Remember that? Not only how far, but the coordinates. And I was thinking back, you know, I used to teach social studies, And part of that was geography. And part of learning geography is learning coordinates. And my point is that when you take a STEM product, okay, and you put it into a social studies, you break down the walls, put it into a social studies context, okay, that to me is what this is all about, because STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, okay, does not exist all by itself. There's not a world out there of just STEM, and that's where all this stuff happens. Everything you do in STEM, i.e. creating a vaccine, okay, affects the entire world. You're not just doing it for the sake of doing it. You're doing it because it has social relevance. Okay, that's why you build a bridge.
Exactly.
And the point of crisscrossing curriculum and having kids understand that they can be part of whatever they want to do. And I'll use you again. You're an arts and animations major, and look what you do now for education. Look what you do now for science. You, my dear Hannah Olson, you, okay, have actually gotten girls and minorities and whoever you want to say into science by what you've done. Daddy, what do you think of that? You've done it.
I think that's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. I mean, look at what you did.
So you said you were a social studies teacher. I've got to tell you about this lesson I wrote the other day because I think you're going to love it. I specifically was tying in history. It's one of our robotics activities, and I was talking about light bounces, so light reflectivity, albedo effect, things like that, and also waves, analog versus digital signals. So there's all the science stuff that's going on. But I set this in the context of Morse code and the robots reading Morse code messages and sending them back and forth to different teams within the class. And so I did all this like history integration with code breaking in World War One and Two, Morse code, and I found like all these historical documents on what codes were actually used and different code names, and I had so much fun like getting into the history side of that one.
Yep.
And that's again the non-science background, is I come at things from a different standpoint. I love history. I love, you know, World War Two and learning all about it and Morse code. So I brought it all into the science lesson.
Thank you for doing that.
Fun.
That is beautiful. Okay, and my point of that is, I hope that science teacher, okay, who's using that, walks over to the social studies department and says, how can we do this together? Okay,
that's
because
actually in
if,
the notes. Hey, do this
yes,
with
thank,
the,
thank
with
you,
the
dear.
Social studies teacher is learning about one of the world wars.
Yeah, well, it's true, because you get a product. I'll give you a good example. You get a product called My STEM Kits, okay? And you push that product, let's say, at a convention for NSTA, okay, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay? But in reality, we could also be talking at what's called the National Council of Social Studies, because all the things you're doing, okay, relate back to everything the kids learn, everything they learn. Okay, in STEM, it's relatable. They can use it in English. They can use it in math. They can use it in social studies. Okay, and that doesn't happen enough. Okay, and that's where all that relevance comes in. And, you know, wherever we're preaching to the choir, my dear. I have a feeling you and I, we're working together here. We're on the same wavelength. It's unbelievable, Hannah. You're excellent at what you do. This is great stuff.
Well, thank you. And I mean, I just think the more interdisciplinary, the more real world you can make it, the more engaged, not just, you know, female students will be or minorities, but everyone will be. Because the same strategy you use to inspire young girls and women is the exact same as what you would use to inspire boys. It's not any different other than the role models.
Exactly.
Because if you make learning fun, you can make learning fun for anyone.
Exactly. Okay, it's that simple. You're exactly right. It's coming up this year, okay, female movie directors. It's the same exact thing. You show them role models, okay, and all of a sudden people believe they can do it, all right? And so it's real important. It's all about relevance. It's all about interdisciplinary. Hannah, what you've done is really good. You can sleep well at night.
I try. Okay, actually,
good.
I can feed quite well. I sleep well.
Good. I bet you. Well, I want you to recognize the importance of your evolution from arts and animation into education, how important that is for the kids. The product that you've helped create.
I even sneak a little bit of art back into the lesson sometimes. You know,
good
draw
girl.
This, sketch that, you know.
My point, and that's actually the interdisciplinary point. Walk it over to the art department. Okay?
Exactly.
It's that simple. Your stuff, it fits. It's great. Hannah Olson, you're wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. It's been wonderful being here.
It has been a pleasure. Was it worth getting up at 7 a.m. to talk to me?
It was, definitely.
It was. It was from my point, and it's 9 a.m. here, but I got to tell you, Hannah, it's a great way to start the week. Okay? It's a great way to start the week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You take care. Have a good week.
You too.
Thanks for being here. Bye-bye. That, everybody, is Hannah Olson. She's one of the co-founders of My STEM Kits, which is the hub product of Mimio STEM Solutions, which is now part of Boxlate. Okay, and that includes a lot of good stuff, 3D printing, STEM design challenges, etc. It's all interdisciplinary. It's all relevance. It's all role models. You take all that together, and you got a great product out there for K-12. It's mystemkits.com. Check it out. All right, we're going to archive at ace-ed.org. Join with us. That's our American Consortium for Equity in Education. You'll love it if you go over there. Our magazine is there. Please flip through it. It's an online journal. All our podcasts are there. ace-ed.org, mystemkits.com. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.